to greet you in the name of Jesus. Good to be here. Chad said, and Chad and I talked, I think it was last week, something about it just does something for us up here to see smiling faces rather than to see faces like this or like this. You're awake and alert. We like to see that. Something just came to my mind here, and I thought I'd share it as a public service announcement, I guess. I saw this on Facebook just this morning, a lady that Mamie and I both know. She's a school teacher in Constantine. We've known her for a number of years, but she posted that, I think this happened maybe yesterday or Friday, or her husband was stung by, he thinks, a bee. He wasn't sure what stung him, but he said right in the middle, right there where your glasses go. And he said he's been stung before and never been bothered, but he was out back someplace on this four-wheeler, and he came up to the house faster than normal, I guess, and she saw him come, and he came in the house, and he tried three times to hit the light switch, and he was kind of out of it, and he laid on the couch, and I think he said 911, and I don't know where they live, but evidently not too far from the hospital in Three Rivers, I think. But anyway, so she got him. She said she had trouble getting him into the car, and then at one point in time he started going into convulsions and foaming at the mouth, and she called 911 and told him the emergency and said to have nurses ready. And which they did, and he's a fairly good sized fella, and so it took several nurses to get him into the ER. Anyways, they're not exactly sure what happened, but the doctor had said a couple more minutes and he would have been gone, died. And she said, I don't know what happened, other than she said he is on some medication for something else that they're treating, and they don't know if it was a reaction to that medication, but he almost died. Anyways, public service announcement. Bee stings are nothing to be made fun of. Take care of them. If you're any kind of allergic to them, be alert. Another thing I thought to share during sharing time, and I thought, well, I'll just wait till I'm up here. But something that happened Friday to me. And children and young adults, this is particularly for you, just stating that honesty and hard work usually does pay off. Not always. There are always going to be people around you that will try to take advantage of you, but usually it pays off. I moved a used mobile home for a lady from Jones to Fort Wayne area, and kind of putting a few things together in my mind, I thought, well, I'm not sure what kind of place I'm going to get into, because it was used, it wasn't in the best of shape, it was a young couple, actually, that was living together, not married, and so, anyways, sure enough, when I got there, I saw that this was not a place that any of us would choose to live, just from the appearance of things. But anyways, we had agreed upon a price, and I'll just tell you what it was, because it was nothing outlandish. I had told her I'd charge her $1,500, and she agreed to that. Then later she told me, she said, the other estimate I got was $5,500. I thought, well, I better raise my prices. But anyways, when everything was said and done, we had a little trouble getting it exactly on the lot where they wanted it, and worked hard, and it was hot, and so I was all done, had unhooked, and was ready to leave, and so she was counting out her cash, and she came to $1,500, and she kept right on going. I said, oh, that's $1,500 right there. No, I'm going to give you a bonus. She said, you worked hard, and you did a good job. So children, young people, honesty and hard work does pay off, usually. That has nothing to do with my message. I'm going to be looking at an old familiar story. We don't call it a story. It's an incident. The crossing of the Red Sea. So we're going to be spending most of our time in Exodus chapter 13 and 14. And Ernie, after the message, I would like to have the song led, Trust and Obey. You'll probably find that in either one of those books. I know it's 9:15 in the Songs of Faith and Praise. No way out. The children of Israel were there at the Red Sea, and there was no way out. I hoped that I could find a little bit more than I did. But where actually were they? And I don't know. Has anybody ever been over there where they crossed the Red Sea? Nobody. They were in the wilderness. And I asked myself the question, what was that wilderness like? It was not level ground. It was not a place that somebody would choose to be. And it said that they camped there. You people that are camping? Yeah. It was not a pleasant place to be. It was wilderness. Many of us have been hunting, particularly the deer hunting. And we get to sometimes we get to places that you have to almost get down on your hands and knees to get through the underbrush. And I don't know if it was that. One commentary said something about the crangy rocks. So I don't know. I don't know what it was like, but it was not a pleasant place to be. It's not a place that we would choose to be in the wilderness. No way out. Some other expressions of our time that we would use, they were boxed in. There was no escape. And if you read carefully here, they actually had wilderness on both sides of them, and the Red Sea in front of them, and the Pharaoh's army behind them. They had no way out. There was no escaping what they were in at that point in time. No escape. Their backs were against the wall. They were up a creek without a paddle. They were at the end of their rope. Probably, most likely, someone thought, this is going to be where we die. Because there was no way out. There would have been an easier way, and I had don't know if I've ever noticed this before, but if we go to chapter 13 in Exodus, and in verse 17, well, maybe we should back up and just start reading. Let's read, starting in verse 14. Of Exodus 13. And it shall be, when thy son asketh thee in time to come, saying, What is this? That thou shalt say unto him, By strength of the hand of the Lord brought us out from Egypt, from the house of bondage. And it came to pass, when Pharaoh would hardly let us go, that the Lord slew all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all that Therefore, I sacrifice to the Lord all that openeth the matrix, being males, but all the firstborn of my children I redeem. And it shall be for a token upon thine hand, and for frontlets between thine eyes, for by strength of hand the Lord brought us forth out of Egypt. Now verse 17. And it came to pass, when the Pharaoh had let the people go, that God led them not through the way of the land. God did not lead them the easy way. It would have been if they would have followed the coast there, it would have been an easier way. But God did not lead them that way. Although that was near, or we would say that would have been the easier way. For God said, Lest peradventure the people repent when they see war. And they returned to Egypt. The children of Israel left not empty-handed, because it says they borrowed a lot of things from the Egyptian people. But they had no weapons of war. They didn't have any swords or spears or anything. And in that sense, they left empty-handed. And so God knew that this was going to take place. And so he led them as a means of protection. He led them through the wilderness because that was going to be a protection for them. How often do we kind of grumble and complain because of our circumstances and then come to find out that this was God's choosing? This was God's way of providing for us or protecting us or some other method. It was God's way. But should warfare have come their way, they were not prepared. They had no weapons. I think the wilderness was actually a means of protection for them. And God knew that. That's why he led them that way. He told them, and we'll read that in a little bit. He told them to turn to, I don't know the expression that's used. Anyways, he told them to turn aside. They were going by the way of the land. And God led them to turn and go into the wilderness. Again, what was that like? I don't know. Let's read the rest of this and then we'll start in with chapter 14. But God led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up, harnessed out of the land of Egypt. Now that word harnessed, from what I could find, means that they went out in an orderly fashion. And someplace, I don't think it was in the scripture reading, but one of the commentaries said that they went out six abreast. Now, there's various estimates of how many people were involved here. A million? Million and a half? I don't know. But do some figuring. How long must that column have been? Six abreast? I really don't know. It was a long train. It was a long row of people that were going to have to go across this Red Sea. How long did it take them to cross? I don't know that either. It must have taken a while. At least a day, I'm going to say. Maybe more. I don't know that. But that's what that means. When they went out harnessed, they went out in an orderly fashion. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had straightly sworn the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones away hence with you. And they took their journey from Succoth and encamped in Etham in the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud and led them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and by night. And here again, I thought, well, it sounds like they traveled night and day. And we can read that God did not let their shoes wear out for 40 years. And so I think God provided them strength and energy to travel night and day. Now, that's my own opinion. We don't read any place where they camped, spread out their tents and sleeping bags and slept for the night. We can't find that. But that's just my own idea. Verse 22, he took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night from before the people. God made so that they could see their way through by day and by night. And that's what leads me to believe that they traveled night and day. They didn't stop to rest. Verses 3 and 4, for Pharaoh will say, let's read in verse 2. Speak unto the children of Israel that they turn, here's where God told them to turn, and encamp before Pahiroth, that's not pronounced right, probably, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baalephon. Before it shall you encamp by the sea. So there they did stop before they were to cross. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land. Pharaoh knew what they were going into, or the direction they were going, and knew that, their pathway was not a pleasant way to travel. Pharaoh knew that. The wilderness has shut them in. So he thought, I've got them now. There is no way out. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that he shall follow after them. And I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. There we see obedience. God told Moses of Pharaoh's plan. So, with God's plan, not only were his people delivered, but his enemies were brought to judgment because of that. What do we do when we find ourselves with no way out? Probably we would have a number of different answers, things maybe from your past. But human nature, we start to complain. Maybe we blame God. Maybe we blame other people. We whine, very similar to complaining. And sometimes we lash out at other people, maybe even those who are sincerely trying to help us. We lash out at them. Maybe we have a pity party because, oh, this is my lot. You have it so much easier than I do. Look where I'm at. And we have a big old pity party. I'm going to skip and read verse 11. We're going to come back here again and read this. And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? So the people were complaining when they knew their lot, when they knew that there was no way out. The people were complaining and they were blaming Moses for taking them this way. Satan's most elaborate schemes are no match for God's protection for his people. That is true for us today as well as it was for them. Now let's back up here and start in verse 4. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that he shall follow after them. And I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. Not much is said maybe from this aspect of, we know what God did for the children of Israel, and we know what his plan was for them to get them to the promised land. But in his plan also, there was a plan to present himself to the Egyptian people, that they would know that there was a God. And that is what took place eventually after this all happened. But God had another plan in place as well, to present himself, to let the Egyptian people know that there is a God and God does care for his people. Verse 5, and it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned against the people, and they said, why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? We know that they were making bricks for the Egyptian people. And he made ready his chariot and took his people with him. Sounds like Pharaoh had a special chariot of his own, which would be understandable. As the Pharaoh, as the king, he had a special chariot, because it mentions his chariot. And he took his people with him, and he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt. Now, was that a different amount other than the 600? Was there additional ones? I don't know that. And captains over every one of them. So I don't know. There again, how many people to a chariot? I would say at least two. So there must have been 1,200, probably elite soldiers, we would call them, that went out after the children of Israel. And they would have had, I don't know what kind of ammunition they would have had back in those days, but they were equipped. They were ready for war, and they were going out to the ill-equipped children of Israel, not equipped at all. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with an high hand. That I'm not exactly sure what that might mean either. We do know, it says that they spoiled the Egyptians. They borrowed from them when they left many material things that they took with them. I don't know if that's a reference to that or not. But the Egyptians pursued after them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them in camping by the sea beside Pehahiroth before Baal Zephon. So again, I don't know the situation, how the land laid. The children of Israel knew that the army was after them. How did they know that? Was there a mountaintop or a high hill where he could see the army coming? I don't know. But they knew that Pharaoh's army was after them and they were coming. And they also knew, obviously, that they had no way out. The most important thing that God's people should do, the latter part of verse 10 and 12. So let's start reading at verse 10 again. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. They were, the expression is shaking in their shoes. They were, I don't know if you've ever been, probably some of you have been in places or circumstances where your life kind of flashes before your eyes and you figure that this is my end. I've had a couple of those experiences, and it's amazing how your brain works in those circumstances, how that so much can go through your mind in just a heartbeat almost. And so they saw this army coming. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. This is the most important thing that God's people should do in situations like that. Too often it's the last thing we do. We blame others, and oftentimes those in authority. Those that God has placed over us for our protection, we blame them. We blame them. It's your fault. You told me that I should do this, so it's your fault. Verse 11, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt. This is a little confusing to me as well. This was their excuse, the people. Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us? Carry us forth out of Egypt. Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt? They were saying, didn't we tell you so? They were blaming Moses again, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. They were looking back at their previous life of slavery, and they thought it would be better to be slaves than to come out here and die where there's no graves. That was their reasoning. Now let's see what God, through Moses, has to say to the children of Israel. This is kind of my key verses here, verses 13 and 14. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not. This is what Moses said. Don't be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more. And the Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. Can you imagine there what they thought when Moses said, don't be afraid? Yeah, right. Did you see what's coming after us? Did you see where we are at? Did you see the wilderness around us? How are we going to get out of this? what might be coming after you? Probably not a physical army. Maybe it's sickness, a disease, a host of other things that we could mention. What's coming after you? Are you afraid? God says you don't need to be afraid. I know exactly what you're going through. Had the children of Israel so soon forgotten how God delivered them from the 10 plagues? We might also respond with, you just don't know what I'm going through. You've never been in my shoes. Maybe I don't know, but God does. I think there's a difference between fear and a deep concern. You might say we're splitting hairs here, but I think there is a difference. We do have some deep concerns at times. I would agree with that. But we don't have to be, as the children of Israel were, deathly afraid that this is going to be the end of us and there's not even place here for a grave to bury me. We don't have to be that afraid because God is in control. Fear causes many things that God does not mean for us to endure. We don't have to be that afraid because God is in control. Anxiety, sleepless nights, these are things that fear brings to us. Ulcers, sickness, headaches. Fear is not something that we want to embrace or to hang on to. Told them to not be afraid. And then he told them to stand still. Now, children, don't you ever use this verse when your mom and dad tell you to do something. Don't you say to your mom and dad, well, the Bible says that I should stand still. That doesn't work. There's many other places in the Bible where God tells his people to do something, to be active. So he tells them to stand still. Our normal instinct is, as the expression is, to fight or flight. We either fight or we run away. I think this command has to do with obedience more than, being exactly where they are. Don't give in to your normal tendencies. Just stand still to rest. Give it to God and let him handle it. I know, I'm human too. We want to handle it. We want to take care of it. We want to use our own wisdom to solve this problem, whatever it might be. But I think this command has to do with obedience. Just to stand still when we feel like running or fighting. Don't give in to your normal tendencies. Just stand still and let God handle that. And I would dare say that we will be amazed at what God can do and does do. How God handles some of those problems that we're facing. The wilderness that we're facing presently. The children of Israel were later given the same command when facing Jericho. There also there was a time for them to be quiet. As they marched around, they were ordered to be quiet. But then on the seventh day, they were ordered to make a noise. Obedience. Oftentimes, our fight and flight instinct gets us into worse trouble. Stand still when facing slander, gossip, when dealing with something that you have no answer for, when waiting for an answer from God and God seems to be absent, when needing some wisdom, stand still, pray, and God is able to take you through that. And then the third thing he says here, says, see the salvation of the Lord. I think this was a call for the children of Israel to reflect. See the salvation of the Lord. What all God had done for them already. The 10 plagues that we mentioned, saving them from famine through Joseph, how God led and supplied for their forefathers, look back and see what all God has done for you. And I say that to myself as well. God has been good to me numerous times and still is. Unjust blame, we talked about that already when they were, children of Israel were blaming Moses for bringing them out there and lashing out at him, in essence saying, see, this is exactly what we said. We should have just stayed where we were. Now let's start reading again in verse 15. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward. Now here, they were told to stand still. Now here, they are told to go forward. But lift thou up thy rod, and stretch out thine hand over the sea, and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. And they shall follow them, and I will get me honor upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten me honor upon Pharaoh, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. God said, you just obey me. You go ahead. You've been told to stand still. Now I'm telling you to go forward. And this is where I had some questions in their actual crossing. It says that the wind blew all that night. So did they cross during the night or during the day or both? Don't know. It doesn't tell us exactly that. But it does say that the wind blew all that night. And I believe it was then in the morning. And just in my own thinking, I think that next day then is when they crossed. I think it took them at least a day to all get across there. Now let's read in verse 19 again. And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. So here now the angel and the pillar both went behind the children of Israel. And this I can well imagine that became a wall. That became, a wall separating the children of Israel from the Egyptian army. The Egyptian army could not see through that. And so they couldn't go. You can't go where you can't see, I guess. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud and darkness to them, to Pharaoh's army. But it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all the night. And those are some expressions that led me to believe that they went across night and day, took them across. Oftentimes we make reference to an angel leading us. In this case, the angel went behind them and became a wall for them. What leads us and gives us as Christians guidance or direction? Oftentimes, blinds and What leads us and gives us as Christians guidance and direction oftentimes blinds and confuses our enemies. There are people that look at us and say, why do you do that? There are people that may look at us and say, how did you do that? This may take place without us even knowing it. Verse 21, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land. wasn't muddy. It was dry. They went across without getting any mud on their sandals. And the waters were divided. How tall was that wall of water? It says that it was a wall. That I don't know either. Can you imagine? I saw a cartoon about this that I've kind of forgotten about. The fish swimming, and all of a sudden they come to a wall. Can't go any further. God has made a wall here. We can't get out of here. Anyways, I try to imagine things literally and see what it must have been like. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. What kind of fear must this have brought to them as they were walking through to see a wall on either side of them? Was this passageway just wide enough for six abreast or wider? Again, I don't know. But it was a wall that they could see. And yet they went on dry ground. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch, 6 o'clock, possibly, the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians. So first of all, the Egyptians went over also. They started over on the dry ground that the children of Israel had already passed. They started over on the dry ground. They probably thought, well, if they can do it, we can too. But they got out in the middle, and God troubled the water and the host and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptian, and took off their chariot wheels, that they drave them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of the Lord, or face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians. If God can take off the chariot wheels, He can keep the wheels on as well. Now I'm referring to our physical, our machines that we operate and drive. God can take care of those things. Just the other week when the singing family was here, Sheldon prayed that God would take care of their vehicle. Keep air in the tires. Keep the pistons going up and down. God can do that. I have one little experience with that I want to tell you about. And I have no answer to this whatsoever. And also I thought of Landon's experience with his truck. Did you get it fixed? Still don't know what was wrong with it. This happened before I was married. I was driving school bus for White Pigeon. And I was done with my morning run. And I left. I had a 67 El Camino at that time. And I didn't go very far from White Pigeon, and I had a flat tire. I had a spare tire, I had a jack, I had a wrench. Within 10 minutes, I was on my way. And then that evening after work, I took the tire to town, and I blew it up. I wanted to see where the leak was at. And I couldn't find the leak. So I left it in the back of the El Camino there, figured, well, it's going to go flat. And it didn't. And I kept it back there, I don't know, for maybe a week. And it did not go flat. So I put it back on. And I think that tire stayed on there until I sold that vehicle. Now, I knew it was flat. I could see that. It was flat. But I couldn't find a hole. And I don't know why that happened. I have no explanation for that whatsoever. I don't know. Maybe someday, within a couple thousand years, I'll think of that and ask God, why did that happen? God can and does take care of those things that even we think that we can handle sometimes. If God can take off chariot wheels, He can also do miraculous things with our vehicles. It won't fix itself, but God can fix it. Was this the same day then, or the next day? Again, I ask a lot of questions. It must have taken some time for all the children of Israel to cross that. But not an Egyptian was left. Not one. It says there was not nobody even left to turn back and go back and tell them what took place. I don't know how they found out. Maybe they came to investigate and saw all the remnants that had washed up on shore, and it makes reference to that. What God does completely, and He does it well. But how soon the children of Israel forgot. After they got across this, we know, 3 days, and they were complaining again. The Lord's mercies are new every morning to us. Let's finish reading this chapter yet, and then we will close. Where did we stop? Verse 28, I said. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the hosts of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. What was left over washed up on the seashore. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and His servant Moses. The Lord bless you. I'll have prayer and then we'll sing the song, Trust and Obey, which lends itself very well to what we've been speaking about. So let's bow our heads for prayer. Lord, I thank You for this day. Thank You again for the privilege and freedom that we have to gather together like this as Your people to talk about You, what You have done and what You have promised to do for us. And Lord, I would pray especially for those here this morning that might be have their backs against the wall and think that there's no way out. Lord, I just pray for Your grace, Your strength, wisdom be with them, and to show Yourself mighty in some way. Bless the food to our bodies. Bless our fellowship. Remain our day. Be with those who go to the jail. Be with Henry as he speaks. May Your name be lifted up, and may those that do have their backs against the wall be encouraged and strengthened that You are real and that You can take care of their problems as well. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.